Blog Talk Radio.
We are Sex Bob-omb, and we're here to make you think about death and get sad and stuff.
I hear a voice here, there's a voice here, the tremor of cold, the feminine of his soul, reaching my threshold, staring at pictures of the blind. My body's stupid, stereo putrid, spilling out music, you know all to it, reaching my threshold, staring at the truth. What's up, what's up, what's up? It is the man of the plan of Daniel Crook, your host for the Black NPR on the boards, Mr. Brooklyn Black. Today, we're back after a week of family emergencies. I am back to deliver you the news and a randomly deep dive subject and a song to which you can look up at your leisure. So it's good. Hope everything was fine with you. Twitter, if you want to check me out, trying to get better with that, BlackNPRPod, Twitter.com. If you want to hear some outlook, questions, answers, whatever you need to produce and just interact with the show. It's BlackNPR@Outlook.com. So let's get into it. I had a bunch of news. We were going to chitty-chat, but we have a sad news to for our 80s and 70s babies. The woman who played Shirley from, not Shirley, sorry, I was about to throw dirt on fucking Shirley's name. Some little goon-ass shit. The lady who played Laverne, Penny Marshall, Gary Marshall's sister, if you're familiar with Gary Marshall, passed away today at 75. She passed away. She died from, you know what? I'm going to bring in Branch early for this because I'm going to talk about this a little bit. This kind of lead into the main topic at large. So, Branch, are you on?
Hello.
Hey, I know this is unprecedented. We're
having
for the news, but I feel like
I
this is
100%
going deeper
expecting to be on mute. So I could eat my dinner while I was listening to you, but go on.
Yeah, because we're gonna have a song at 9:30 to eat during then. But the only reason I brought you in early is because Penny Marshall died today, and today's show is gonna be about old New York. We're gonna be talking about old New York and what New York used to be. And I feel like Penny Marshall to me, and that Gary Marshall to me, was old New York. You know, like I felt like just that energy also was just super old, oldie, timey, stickball and Spalding New York.
Well, like Bronx people, too.
Now, the other reason I brought you into this, do you know what she died from?
Oh, that's why I thought you brought me in.
That was 100% why I brought you in. She died from
diabetes.
Okay,
I don't
now
really
she's gonna go on,
what that means.
She's gonna ramp it. She's gonna go on a rant right now. A little bit of a rant. There's something that I've had a conversation with somebody about this today, and we've always talked about this before. Just give your quick opinion. I'll let you go back on mute. So just say what you got to say about diabetes.
It's fucking bullshit, and I don't wish it on my worst enemy. Only because it seems very difficult for people to make the adjustment once it's found out. It's better to avoid it because it seems really difficult to manage it. Losing appendages.
Limbs. Vision.
Limbs. It starts with the appendages and then the limbs and then the susceptibility to infection that can make everything just go hinky and, you know, kidney failure, dialysis, and just all of it. It's just a painful, slow setup.
Like such a avoidable way, like something you could avoid wholeheartedly, and it seems like people don't seem to avoid it. Like once they get it,
well, you know what's unfair though. I think the rates are much higher than they were when we were growing up. If you think about it, I think that was something that happened that befell people who had the luxury of living a longer life. And what's occurring, so Penny Marshall being 75 years old and going down to diabetes is not the worst thing in the world because 5-year-old woman, she's done so much, she's accomplished. But when you have peers who are having a rough go, like, you know, Dallas Penn, you know, and him almost, Dallas Penn who's like a sneaker god, a
fucking
hook
turned into a, look like fucking spaghetti meatballs.
Yeah,
gross.
You know, and he wasn't taking it seriously. He had gotten up, he gotten up to almost 300 pounds, and he was just, you know, enjoying, he was enjoying life like he was still 22. But, you know, I know you don't like when we talk, not conspiracy, but the food's different because there's a lot more sugar being pushed, and our bodies just don't, haven't evolved to be able to deal with it, and it's killing people. You know, if Penny Marshall was 55, 45 now, she would probably be gone sooner.
That's, it's like 75, it was like, oh, she's 75, I get it, but it's like, she wasn't like some lady working in the fucking city office.
You know what didn't kill her? You know what
smoking?
Didn't kill her? Yeah, isn't that crazy?
Yeah, some people predisposed. You could beat that fucking lung cancer. You get it.
Well,
you're not
going to get it. Usually you get it when you're 82, like Joe Paterno, or you get it young. Mesothelioma and things of that nature. Since we're talking about old New York, you got to talk about mesothelioma.
We'll get back into that. So you go finish with this, and then get back into the news. We'll speak to you back at 9:15, all right?
All right, so I'm getting a 7-minute break while on, like, live radio. This is amazing. I'm not even in a union yet. This is amazing.
Yeah, you see, not even a union. Taking a break, Chief. Take your break. Take your break. You don't want the problems. Take your break. You're just putting mute.
I'm punching out. I'm punching out from
punch
the break.
Punch out. Later, dog. So what else is going on? We also have the government is going to be shutting down at the end of this week. Because Trump wants the wall built, and his understanding is that by holding the government hostage, I don't know if some of you people here, the government's being shut down, it means, oh, okay, well, you don't got to pay taxes. What a government shutdown means that, like, all the processes of the government stop. So, like, you can't go to a state park, you can't go to Statue of Liberty, you know, certain things are not going to be operational. Some things are operational, but a lot of things just not operational. They're not operating at their base, so that's happening. And the reason I think they're saying that it's going to be occurring is that because at the end of this year, the Republicans are on the House, so whatever they need to get done, they're going to have to do now. They're going to have to get it done and square it out now. And they're not really taking any shit now because nobody's up for election. So all the inconvenience, you know, all the people who work in the government are not going to get paid. They're not going to remember this come November. So we'll keep an eye on that. Hopefully next week we'll have some more news. But what else we got? What else we got? American woman missing to root. Don't go to Peru. This lady in America, this American lady went down to Peru to kind of like see the world before she went blind. And now the bitch is gone. Now, I'm a big proponent of seeing the world. But I'm also a big proponent of not going places when you're legally blind. She went there, this 35-year-old lady. She went there from fucking Detroit, chilling in Peru, and now she's fucking gone. If you can't see, you know, be careful, people, especially ladies, be careful. Don't be going down and acting out, you know, trying to see shit, and the next you know you're in a bag somewhere. Let's all take it easy. Let's get one more because we have a big show today. We're going to be talking about New York and all of the avenues energy. So we'll be like for you guys to call in if you have any memories or thoughts or places you want to talk about at 347-857-4302. It's starting about 9:15. I think we should be getting into that talk. Finally, Richard Michael Cohen got 3 years for his lying to the government about using money to shut up a porn star and lying under oath. Seems like it's throwing everybody into a tizzy. I don't see, again, I'm going to say this every week, I don't foresee anything happen with this. I just think that it's going to be a lot of storm and a lot of drain and a lot of people going to jail and being indicted. Like, what you want, what you close your eyes when you hear me talk about this, which is him being let out of the White House and being impeached, that's not happening. Like, it's never going to be a situation where that's going to occur. Okay? So, yeah, that's good. Again, next week, I think it'll be the next week's show. I'm not really sure what we're going to be talking about next week. I think it's Christmas week, so we might be off. So I can spend time with my non-existent family. That's not my situation, dog. But, yeah, so if you have any questions or you want to, like, talk or if you, like, really bagged in and, like, hey, I want to do a show, hit me on the Twitter. As I said before, it's BlackNPRPod.
or theblackimperialoutlook.com and hit me up. All right, fam, let's get into a Brooklyn Black. Time for the weekly ad drop.
Yo, shout out to those that help us keep the lights on over here at Pregame Radio. Check out ME Productions for all your digital media production needs. Like them on Facebook at ME Productions with a Z and email them at heyme.tv@gmail.com. Also, check out LitBK. Check them out at litbkny.com. Check out their Black Star Power Tees featuring some of your favorite entertainers and use the code PREGAMEISLIT at checkout for 20% off all your purchases. Also, check out iCraveWear. Check them out at iCraveWear.com. Pick up your Facts t-shirt representing your hood and pick up your Brooklyn Certified pins, t-shirts, and more. Use the code PREGAME at checkout for 15% off your order.
That was Dornick. That was Second Thoughts by Dornick. Smooth shit. We are coming into the winter solstice hot, trying to give you music to make scenes to. You know what I'm saying? Other Niggas Queen 2019 is coming up. I want to make sure y'all niggas are ready for the deaths. So, all right, we're getting back in here. Hopefully, she ate her gabagool. We're getting ready to get into some old New York, pretty much what this means. We're going to be talking about all the places we went, all things we did. From the 80s and 90s, what it was like, racism, everything. Pretty much just talking about New York in general, get into the bottom of it. Because I think people talk about it a lot. I don't think a lot of people understand what it fucking means to be from here and why a lot of us have a hard time leaving despite it being way too expensive, way too dangerous, and more or less not what we're going to describe. So let's introduce properly Ms. Shondell Branch. You don't unmute
Hello?
The phone, fan. Yeah, there you go. Back.
I'm here.
My nigga's back.
Hi.
Get into it. We're going to start off. Where are you from?
First of all, I'd like to give a shout out. My name is Chantel. I'm from Jamaica, Queens. No, I'm from Jamaica.
What's up, y'all? What you got to say? Who's on the phone?
Well, first I want to say that you nor I really wasn't doing shit but getting dragged around by our parents in the 80s until, you know, we were able to kind of come off of a stoop.
Sure.
You know, but there was.
So how was your upbringing when you were, like, in the 80s? Were you allowed to kind of wander your neighborhood? Were you, like, stuck to your block?
We'll say that one more time.
Were you allowed to wander around, or would you, like did you get to hunt the whole neighborhood, or were you just on your block? Or
okay.
Were you in, you know,
the 80s, so, in 86, when my parents got divorced, we moved to Jamaica. Well, we moved from one part of Jamaica to another, so we moved off at Sutton. So I lived on a really long block. So Fox is a really, really long block. It really should be three blocks, but it's one. So the address has changed three times on my old block. So that was really the beginning and the end of it. At the time, there was a lot of kids on that block. There was also a lot of people smoking crack and deciding that crack was going to be something they were going to do instead of, you know.
That's going to be, like, as a current theme in this stretch. We're going to go soup the nuts. I think crack started really hot. And I don't think people under a certain age get how commonplace used it was at a certain point where niggas would just whip out a pipe and they'd be like, oh, okay. And it's just what niggas did.
It wasn't
and it was
that way. It was one day one day you see this person going to work every day, and a week later, it felt like what was a week later, they were just dirty and just jangly and darting eyes.
Oh, when you fell off the fucking edge, yes.
And
when your mom's friend Michael became your mom's friend Michelle, and your mom's friend Michael who worked, your mom's friend Michael who worked at the DMV, ended up being your mom's friend Michael, who sold you all a small TV for $5.
Right. So it was weird because, okay, so that was I started to have to walk to school. So we would, like, walk and you'd see all these crack vials everywhere. And it was weird because that part of Queens is not a neighborhood of public housing. It's people who have houses. And there were people who were losing their houses. Their houses were becoming spots. People were aggressively smoking crack and aggressively selling crack. And kids were still just going to school. Like, you're going to school and you're getting good grades. And the SPECTA program is coming in and telling you, don't use drugs. And you're like, got it, officer, whatever. We're doing the legwork. We get it. We didn't need that type of instruction. But in terms of, like, what was my purview at 10, 11, I could go maybe a couple blocks over for a specific reason. But for the most part, we were on the block. And it was such a long block where we went to the park. But a lot of things could happen on the block where somebody could see you. So, you know. And then in the summer times, my mom wasn't really a person who believed in kids just being idle. So we went to camp. And I was a latchkey kid. But being a latchkey kid meant you got home and you went in the house and acted like you was Molly Dodd for the 2 hours of you were sitting down with your cool glass of Hawaiian Punch watching Double Dare and then switching over to Video Music Box. But just like having the crib to yourself was, like you felt like you were much more. I think in that way, I think that was a really good thing. I know you and I disagree about it, but having that time alone to just chill, because it's their setup is different. My mom and Julio worked outside of the house, and they both
Julio worked in Brooklyn and my mom worked in Union Square. So she was on the express bus or on the subway coming home. So she didn't get home till 7. And the way she set it up is that she let my sister go to a babysitter. And it was like a certain time I was to go get her from the babysitter. So we would all kind of arrive together in the house. But I would have about 2 to 3 hours where, you know, what I wanted to watch on TV was what I wanted to watch. I had my Hawaiian Punch. I had my Frosted Flakes. I was supposed to be doing my homework. You know, I had free reign over the phone. It was pretty lit. What you weren't supposed to have company. We'll get to the 90s and discuss how that shift changed. But point of view, a little scary. Sometimes Linnell was allowed to be in the house, so we would do homework together. So me and Linnell would, like, kick it and drink Hawaiian Punch or Kool-Aid and watch cable, because I had cable, and kick it on our Siemens furniture. We were sitting on C. Siemens first, on our Siemens furniture.
Yeah, Siemens first. That's Siemens first, nigga. Out of Huffman Siemens. That, with the double entendre that we all heard in fucking Electric Relaxation and didn't get.
Bust up on your couch, now you got some new furniture.
Couch, theme of furniture, yeah, didn't get it. It's like, got it, but didn't get it. It's like, all right, got it now. You're just talking about coming on your couch like a savage. Mm-mm-mm-mm-mm.
No, yeah, that's pretty gross. So that was the setup until junior high school, because everything changed in junior high school because I went further away. And just, you know, your leash is a little longer. So I had to go across town to junior high school. And so that was fun. We get kicked off the bus at Aqueduct and have to walk our way home. So that was an adventure.
Because you went to school in Ozone Park, right?
Yeah, I went to school on the Ozone Park Howard Beach line. And
yeah, so
that was fun.
And a lot of
totally
a lot
experience.
Of, a lot of us Nick dogs.
Yeah, you know, it was very mixed school, and I was in the smart kid program, so it was a different setup, but your ride home was still with the motherfuckers from your neighborhood, so.
Can I ask you a question? As you've gotten older, have you ever interacted with any of the kids from the slower program?
Nope, never did, nope.
No, not your older, like, because I wouldn't remember, but I'm trying to remember in my mind, maybe I blocked out just for sanity reasons. Have you spoken to anybody that you knew in high school was, like, struggling? Have you interacted with them after school?
I don't want to.
Don't out a nigga. Don't be like,
no.
Say a nigga name.
Yeah, it's like you're asking me to slander people's children.
Yeah, I don't want you to slander nobody. But the question, the actual question I'm asking is, did their life turn out fine or did their life turn out poorly in your estimation?
This is going to require a little of a nuanced answer.
Okay.
There are some people who do not believe that you should tell kids how gifted they are, because by doing that, you diminish the other kids. And I can
don't
say to you that
kids.
I can say that the kids in the smarter classes got away with a lot more. So they didn't want you to get in trouble. If you got into a fight, they didn't want you to have out of school suspension because you were in the ST or the STE program. So they figure it out for you because you were smart. Because that's what your value is in 7th, 8th, 9th grade, is just being smart, being intelligent, being kind of like clever. You know, you like that. Teachers love clever kids. At that age, as a 12-year-old, it's adorable. But the kids who weren't in those classes, they were treated so much harshly that I think that some of the, you know, when people say the school-to-prison pipeline, some of them being dismissed in some of those ways probably affect them adversely and probably led to some of the things that, because of what was going on in the environment at the time, some of them kind of got drawn in. Because even one of my quote-unquote smart friends who tried to be a drug dealer, when he got caught up, it was like it was fixed. And then his life was fixed. And then he just got to go on with life. But other people who were in other programs with being thrown into group homes and just handled differently. So, and also, you've met Tamiko before, and while she doesn't remember a lot of things, Tamiko remembers everybody who was in a dumb class, and she will quickly remind you now. If we saw someone, she was like, I don't know them, they were in a dumb class.
That's why I'm like, I can't even wrap my mind or think of it. It was like, I can't even think about it at all. And I was like, you know, if you was into like read them with your finger class, I don't recall. So I was like, if you were, and this is a legitimate question I'm asking, if you were in a class where you had to read with your finger, call in.
Oh, don't do that. 347-857-4302. What's unfair about that, and now I'm jumping into my bleeding heart bag, is that some of it's, I know, some of it is natural ability, but a lot of it is what your family gives you when you're 2 and 3 and 4. By the time you come into the school, like, it's about what they gave you. So everybody's people couldn't give them the same thing. So
that's what they said. That's what it's when Blasio's wife said her like campaign is to get niggas to speak to their kids. At first, I heard it go, that sounds crazy, and then I realized, oh, niggas is not speaking to their kids.
Yeah,
they're not speaking man word to these kids. So when they get there, they haven't heard any words yet. They've only heard bare minimum amount of words. And then when everyone else is speaking very clearly and concisely, they're not very comfortable with words. And then they kind of get left behind, and then they're going to be on the back foot.
But, you know, we're also the Sesame Street generation, the Electric Company generation. There was a lot of focus on children's programming that had an educational slant to it. So the vibe was a little different. But then the breakdown is that there was a lot of – there's a set of parents that were lost to the aggressive epidemic of crack and just the fallout, whether you were affected or impacted by it. So kind of getting back to the topic of old New York, a lot of families were kind of being distraught. People were, the prison rates were going up. People were going to jail. People were scared. And maybe the attention wasn't paid as it should have been or could have been. So if your family was able to be intact or somebody was able to grab a hold of things and just plead to the kids and your kids were smart, then you were just going to push them in the direction of school. Because I don't even remember, like, basketball was a big thing, but, like, it was about, it wasn't, basketball and then Little League. It was a lot of people on Little League. A lot of the kids that I, like, it was a lot of boys on Little League growing up. I know that's not really a thing anymore, but it was more like go to school and just, like, do your school thing. And, like, don't start selling drugs when you're 13. But there's definitely people who I know who went that route very early if their parents weren't just able to grab a hold of it.
You kind of got left to your own devices because, like, the 80s, which, you know, we do our nervous breakdown theaters where we look at the wonderful TV shows like Molly Dodd, obviously, and Manimal. And if you look at all those shows, so I think it's a little good stuff for TV. But then I believe that if we're talking about old New York, we need to talk about some of the commercials, like, what's his name, Crazy Eddie, T.C. Richards and Sons.
Well, before you talk about that, talk about the fact that at 11 years old, I don't know if you were, because I know our families kind of operated differently, but, like, I used to get on the Q6 bus with Leaky, and we would go to our school that was on Jamaica Avenue until we started public school. Like, Leaky was, like, Malik was 5, and I was, or 6, maybe, and I was, like, 11, and I'd do that ride with her before we went to public school. And
oh, being able to ride the bus is like going buses it's not. I don't think it is to this day, but I think we had this discussion before, but, like, kids not from New York City, to be like, all right, they're entitled bus, they get driven everywhere they go. So you can't just be like, all right, family, put you on a bus and a train and good luck. Like, we're given
yeah,
like
I mean,
that
by the
setup.
Time I was 12, I was coming into the city by myself to meet my mom with Malik, just on our own. Like, we knew what, like, to do, and that was it. And I always carried change in case I needed to make a phone call, and I always knew numbers, and I used to call people collect if I didn't have any change to be yelled at for not having change because I spent the change at the damn store on candies and Pepsi probably was my drug of choice at that time.
But you also, when we took the trains, we knew we had a direct location. It was like, you're going to go from here and you get off here. Like, there was no like.
I was going to Union Square from Jamaica. I was doing that.
But I mean, like, that was your trip, though. That was your trip, is what I'm saying. Yeah, yeah. Because my trip was from my house before the 60 would be the E, the 19B to the E, to the D, to the 55 to get to my grandmother's house.
Right.
But that was my trip. I didn't add anything to it. So, like, if the E was fucked up, I'd have been out. I'd have been flat-assed out. So I would have been like, oh, that's that, man. I guess I live here.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Live in the, we're talking about the 80s, old 80s. Yeah, fuck that. The subways, I don't even complain. Everyone comes, oh, man, the subways are so fucked up. No, dog. The subways,
remember when the lights
literally
would go
like
out?
A watch. They would just go out. And it'd be
weird.
Full gangs breakdancing and, like, plotting. And it'd just be, it looked like a fucking, that movie, The Warriors, it felt like that. It felt very lawless.
Yeah.
I don't remember ever seeing cops. And I love being in the lights out cars. I would tell my grandmother when I was younger, oh, we need to go in the lights out cars. She would do it. So to this day, I got to give grandma props for him because she let me lead her into some real dangerous fucking situations for the sake
for
of adventure. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
that could have been the end of her, dog. It was like late too, like on a Friday, and on the D train heading uptown in the era of Fort Apache, just hanging out.
No good.
New York wasn't a safe place.
It was not safe. Like, I knew my mom had come home once or twice, and I was little, and her purse got snatched, you know, walking or whatever. Like, just weak, this crazy shit. And it was, but then there still wasn't a lot of fear instilled in us.
No.
You know about some of the places and spaces that I chose to put myself in. So,
yeah, but we got to cruise into the 90s. We got to cruise into the 90s. So once we go into the 90s, that's when you start putting your life in danger.
Yeah, intentionally. For the love of a laugh and music. Yeah.
Life of music.
And Kiki's. Yeah, but, you know, there was also the shopping, the going to Brooklyn and going to the first movie I remember going to as a young adult, well, as a little kid, but, like, really excited was Crush Groove. And we saw it on Fulton Street in downtown Brooklyn.
Crush Groove.
Yeah, it was
Crush
pretty
Groove's
lit.
Crush Groove's lit, man.
I totally definitely knew I was a whatever heterosexual was when I saw Blair Underwood. I was like, all right, I know I'm like 11 or 10, but I get it.
Blair Underwood,
you hit a button. I don't know what the button was, but I was just like, oh my god.
Was Blair Underwood in Law and Order?
No, Blair Underwood plays Russell Simmons in Crush Groove.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Crush Groove to me was like, that was crazy. I was like, what the fuck, they know each other? I was like, all these rappers know each other? Like, Fat Boys know these niggas? Like, it blew my mind. It was a crossover fucking event for the ages of these niggas just breakdancing and kicking it. And remember when, this is probably really 80s and 90s conceit, when they would just have hip-hop movies? Crush Groove and
there was a bunch of dance, hip-hop dance movies that my mom loved to take us to the movies, and she would indulge me and, like, I mean, when I tell you the movies, and then when the movies came out in the video, because now we can talk about video stores, I would, like, when we would go to the video stores, I'd want to watch the movies again. I love the ones when, like, the nice white girl moves here from wherever and joins the dance troupe, and she...
Got you.
You know, like,
got
those
you.
Ones, they were, those were my shit. And, like, I would learn dance routines and, like, be doing them in the living room because that's just because. Because that's entertainment. We'd go to the video store and everybody would get a choice, and my choice would be, like, Fast Forward or The Last Dragon, or I didn't really like the break-in movies because I just didn't.
Yeah, Breakdancing is visceral. Breakdancing is lit to see in person, especially if you've seen it in person. Breakdancing really doesn't do it for you on screen, and I didn't really care. The only thing inviting about breaking too is that Jean-Claude Van Damme is in the audience.
Yeah.
That's something I recall. I just remember him being back to just really digging it. He was like all in. He said, I love this. I'm doing it. So this is the beginning of a long career. I'm not going to be a joke at any point. So then we're going to cruise in the 80s, 90s. It was fucking dangerous as shit. Then we're going to the 90s, right? Like, because we're like, what? I'm like 10, 11, 12. The music
so
got
fucking
better.
It was dirty. Everywhere was dirty.
It was dirty.
Everything was so dirty. Like, we littered. Everybody littered. People, there was dog shit. Like,
and people shit.
It was I don't know about that, but like dog poop was like something that could happen to you. The dirtiness is the one thing that I'm kind of pleased about to an extent. And the lack of dog shit. Anytime I see dog shit, I'm like, who are these people who live here? Why are they not curbing their dogs? It's 2018. Stop.
Yeah, the stretches in the Bronx now that's like up in like Marble Hill where it's like it's just covered like almost wall to wall dog shit, which is fucking bananas if you think about it. Like just move the nigga over. If you're not gonna pick it up, just move the shit over to not in the fucking walkway, you lazy fuck. Just move it
the
over to the grass.
The Upper East Side is pretty bad too. That's the wild shit. The Upper East Side is just as nasty.
Just you know what I mean? I'm just saying like move your nigga into the fucking street, nasty fuck.
Yeah.
What the fuck is this? But then you step in it, and you step in dog shit, it ruins your fucking day. I don't care what it is. You could just finish sliding in all the box, making all the money, fucking dapping all the daps, and then you step in dog shit, and that's that. That's your day now. You're the nigga who stepped in dog shit. You're going to be doing that little scrape move, you got to do. It does nothing. Ugh,
yeah.
No thanks. It was gross. I mean, it was cool. But other thing, too, is that it was just violent in a real weird way. Crack was – I'm underplaying it because that viewed the show as us talking about fucking Rock. It was big. It was cutting niggas to fall out.
Yeah, I don't have –
Like, it was like a full family's out. And it was like this thing like Wayne, and Wayne was like cross street. It was always fucking Wayne, da-da-da. And then Wayne just went from Wayne across the street to like, don't let Wayne in the house.
Yeah.
Like it was a solid command. Don't
friend,
let Wayne in the house.
So you know I like purses. We're friends, so you know these things about me. So I've always liked purses, and you always make fun of me and say that I've been an adult since I was born. So I had a
yellow
purse.
Yeah, this nigga sounded like she was fucking 45 years old when she was like 12.
I'm not
that shit was fucking blew my fucking mind. This nigga came down. She lived in the most wood-paneled Queens-ass house. And then you see all her friends, who I know most of the people in this video. Like, and then you see this queen fucking estime, Ida B. Wells, comes from upstairs going, well, I told you we must go down to the store. And I said, we need to figure it out. So I said, they're going to give me a call one way or the other. And I was like, what the fuck is this? And no one's shocked by it. I'm like, no one's shocked by this little girl with this grown ass voice. Like, she just finished smoking a cigarette and cursing a nigga out on the phone. And they're watching and laughing and talking. Like, this shit is not insane to them. It wasn't just because she sounded like she's carrying herself. Like, she's like gathering herself, coming down the steps. Like, yes. And they would be making everything be going, staying, what's happening? Like, all right, dog. Alright, you like it, I love it. But go ahead.
Fuck you.
Cursive.
That's how puberty works, Danny. Your voice changes and mine changed early. That's all.
Yep, that's puberty. Puberty turns you into a black woman who's seen it all. Got you. Fair enough.
Sure. Yeah.
I've not dated a woman as mature as you was when you were 12 years old, fam. Like, I've yet to meet someone who's had their life figured out as much as you when you was 12 years old. Everyone sat back and listened. The adults was like this, Whatever you got to say. You know you got to answer what you got to say. First off, this is the 80s,
I was
90s.
Not 12.
It's the
15. 90s.
So no one's just randomly videotaping stuff. So they're videotaping these little girls. You just came out and said, all right, I got to finish putting this nigga in order. Like, he thought he was telling me what the fuck he's going to do. Yeah, and you let him know, and then you came down the steps like, we're going to figure it out. When's the time? Then let me know. So if he's playing it out. Well, I talked to Keisha the other day. You know, like, Keisha the other day? What the fuck are you talking about? It was surreal, people. Surreal. If I could find the fucking audio and play it, I would. It was surreal. You're going to hear teeny, teeny voices and just this voice of someone who's seen it all, been there, done it again, bought a T-shirt. That woman was 15 years old. So go on.
Are you done so I can tell you about how my mom's best friend's crackhead sister stole my $5 out of my yellow purse, and if I saw her today, I wouldn't spit on her? I haven't forgiven her. Not on sight, because she's very jangly. She's jangly, but she's clean, and I'm happy for her. She's in the church, and she's clean. But
that's where you go. That's the crack. Goes
yeah,
from crack
she's in
to,
the church.
Goes from crack
she's
to
clean.
Crack.
But, you know, and they tried to explain to me that she's sick, and I was, like, mad. Like, I wanted justice. I wanted justice.
What, do you demand satisfaction?
Well, she, exactly. I couldn't believe that she went in my purse. I couldn't believe she took my money, and then she just dipped off. Like, she took my five.
She took your bread and split the scene.
She split the scene, and then they had to sit down and have a conversation and apologize. And she's, you know, she's on drugs, and she doesn't mean anything by it. And it wasn't you personally. It's just that she saw an opportunity. And I'm like, this is real. I go, where the fuck
getting
up my money, though?
Yeah. You were getting told a whole lot of blah, blah, blah. A whole lot of, it's that conversation to start. Yo, here's another five. And then all that explanation. That's how it should be. Here's my money. And then it's more, give you your money back. Maybe a little some extra for the trauma. Maybe give you a 10. Then give you the explanation about her being sick. So while you're counting the
ones. I don't
think
I ever spoke to her again. I don't really think I ever spoke. Like, I think I was always quiet when I saw her and held on to my thing.
Yeah, she was a danger fan.
You know
as
how
an adult,
I feel about
danger. As an adult, if you were an adult and somebody in a friend group just rolled off and took money out of somebody's purse, it was pretty common knowledge, and everyone's like, oh, we're good. Or if you pull some bullshit, you know what I mean, where it's like, okay, you did something, like, really fucking crazy, and everyone knows you did something real fucking crazy, then you're going to be like, no thanks. Everybody else seems to be okay with this. Not me.
Now, did you shop Queen Center Mall? What was your situation
yeah,
like? How did you?
It's Queen Center
so that
Mall,
was like your
Junction
mall?
Junction Boulevard. Queen Center Mall. You take the 72.
What the fuck was on Junction Boulevard?
No, you get your like little things. You got your. You had a. You know, like the back in the day. So you had your like, your Stride Right. You know what I'm saying? You had your.
So you
were
rocking the Stride Right shoes. Where your grandmother made sure you had good shoes on your feet.
Always
you
had
are,
good shoes.
You are my brother
dog.
In flat footedness. So
yeah, always had good shoes or sneakers with cartoon characters on the side. The idea that these niggas is walking around with full adult sneakers breaks my heart. As when I was 7, 8 years old, I wasn't thinking about Jordan. I wasn't thinking about anybody. I was thinking about I had a Pierce. I had some Alfs. You know what I'm saying? I had Transformers once. I had Zips. The Zips made you run really, really fast. So you get Zips.
Mm.
In a commercial, the guy put on the Zips, and he, like, run super fast. I had a bunch of Zips. But was I think I got my first pair of, like name sneakers, like, in 93, when I got a pair of some big-ass, I think they were Converse. And they had, like, this foam in the middle. I thought I was Captain Shit, Hot Shit. I was going to be a hooper. Because I was like, everyone's getting tall, so I'm just waiting my moment. I just gotta wait a couple of days, and this tallness gonna kick in, like a hoop
okay,
the rest of these
okay.
niggas, and it didn't come, fam.
It didn't hit.
It was not hitting. I said, "This ain't it, chief." I literally was waiting. I was like, one dude my height, then a nigga was like 6'2". So I was like, all right, everybody in my neighborhood was like 6-something. So all right, it was my time to get tall, and I could hoop with these niggas. You know what I'm saying? Because all the hoop niggas got chicks. That's how.
Did
you
play basketball as a young person, like in the park?
I played, yeah, in the park at 90 something Street Park, and over by PS127, and in my buddy's backyard. My buddy had a hoop. He lived 3 houses down. He had a hoop, and we'd go back and forth and go for hours and hours because I could rebound, even though I'm short, because I'm tenacious as fuck. You know what I'm saying? So I can just get up there and take the shit because I play it like a football player. I just can't shoot because hand-eye coordination.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And I can't, like, lay up or dunk because of 5'7".
So now did you did Queen Center Mall. Did you come down and do, like, the Alexander store that was over there on Queens Boulevard?
Or did you guys go
Manhattan and Bronx Way, like Fordham Road and all that shit?
No, we did, no. So we went down here, we'd go up, and we'd go to Queen Center Mall to eat. And then, because my great-grandmother would go up to pay, she'd pay the Sears bill. She'd go up to go to Sears and pay the Sears bill.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Which was right across the street from, and I think I told this story before, I saw Coming to America at that theater across the street from Sears, which was across the street from McDonald's, which was a Wendy's.
Right.
And
which
I,
is all
when
gone.
I saw it, niggas shot it up.
Except the
church.
No,
it's a
church
now.
And,
it's a super church.
Yeah,
niggas
the
shot
the
fucking place
center.
Up. And they didn't shut the
yeah.
movie down. That was 1987, 1988. And he said,
wow.
Where are we going to go? And the guy goes, New York or L.A.? And he goes, I'm in New York. And I'm like, oh, yeah, nigga. And he goes, all right, we're in New York. And then they say, yo, Queens, nigga. Because mind you, it wasn't a classic back then, everybody. So no one knew where he said he was going to go. So it was a legitimate surprise to everybody around when the nigga said Queens. Niggas are screaming and yelling. And nigga took some heat out of his fucking waist and started shooting in the air. And then he stopped the movie. And then it got you here, like, on the loudspeaker. He goes, all right, you got it done? And he's nigga. And then they put it back on.
Oh, wow. Okay,
now,
that's intense.
Yeah, yeah, it was. Yeah.
So,
yeah, it was,
we never
it
went
was 12:30 in the morning.
We went to that movie theater? No, we went to the Midway on Queens Boulevard in Forest Hills. Or we went to the
to
movie work theater
you,
that
dog.
Was...
Left rack news.
Well, obviously.
Was,
you didn't have to tell
rack,
me.
Left rack news was nuts. Because my brother's father was, like, down with them niggas. It was just a bunch of niggas, they chicks, and me. There was no other thing. Because, you know, you do that when you're a kid. You're looking for something that's familiar, like, I don't belong here. Just a kid or something resembling a kid. And no, it was just a bunch of niggas in polos with those big rings, the big rings and the big chains. Bunch
right,
of drug dealers and there were chicks. It was, yeah, it was a lot of drug dealers.
Did you
chicks.
Have any experience going on Jamaica Avenue? What was your
no.
what was the situation?
My Jamaica that? Experience. My Jamaica experience was so limited in that early point of view because the only reason I went out there is because my cousin lived in where the fuck did she live? She lived in Rockaway Boulevard. Like I told you, those
oh, so you
had
to
beat.
Cut across. Oh, okay, so you
yeah,
had to cut across.
But we would never go over there. Ever. Like my memory, it wasn't until I got to high school and started hoeing that I started going out there. But I got
okay.
to my whole face.
So you didn't like
going
like Jamaica Avenue to like buy clothes and stuff like that?
No. No, there would have been no
okay.
need because I had all of my stuff was available for me either on Steinway. The Steinway was the other one.
Oh, yeah, Steinway was fun. That was fun.
Yeah,
if you were looking for a sneaker that you couldn't find on Jamaica Avenue and you knew somebody with a car who was super trying to get something, that was a ride. I was always up
you
for
you know, that's
there.
A move for y'all niggas. That's not a move we could have pulled. Like, as dudes, y'all couldn't be like, yeah, I didn't have opportunities for niggas to drive me places because they were trying to get some meat.
No. I don't mean it that way. I mean that sometimes, Danny, and I know that we had different experiences, but sometimes you socialized with people and you spent time with them and you kind of ran around and did things and the total end goal was not trying to figure out they could put their penis in your vagina. Sometimes you just ran around and it just happened to be people around who was with the shits to go and that's who rolled.
Male-female relationship, man-women relationships that weren't exclusively in the dominion of sex? No, I don't scare the fan. That don't sound like y'all sound like the 90s to me. He's like, you a lady. Niggas literally was just like, you a woman. Don't chill. Blah, blah. And like, if there was a chick there, like, I don't know. I'm trying to think of any of the history of me. And the most of the niggas I hung out with in high school and back then were all from Bayou. Like, they were all like Hollis, Foch, and what have you. Like, I didn't know too many people in high school.
No. Go back. It's Foch. It's not Foch. It's Foch.
Foch,
nigga. It's Foch. It is Foch Boulevard, not Foch. There's no fucking such thing as Foch. No, it's not. The Koch is not the same as Foch. No. It's Foch Boulevard.
It's pronounced the same.
It's not pronounced the same.
I don't know. I don't know. Y'all niggas be calling it the Van Wyck, and it's not the Van Wyck. All I know is that y'all niggas
are calling
it the Van
Wyck. That's different. It's the Van Wyck, but who cares? So what was the situation with you guys going into the city? Did grandma do the city stuff, or did your mom? Like,
no, I did the city.
That,
I would
like,
go to the city
deal?
With my grandmother all the time. That was not a big deal. We went. That was early. That was when I was 80. We used to go in the '80s. We used to go every week. We go to a museum. We go to photography studios, like where guys like my grandma had like a lot of friends who were like professionals who was a photography. Like it was almost like a Mr. Rogers kind of life. So like every Sunday, Saturday, I'd go and see somebody else like do a thing. So I got to go into like the little booth where they do the trains, the control booth.
Mm-hmm.
and they explained to me like how they do the intersections of the tracks and how different trains get routed to where. And I did another one where it was at a rooftop greenhouse on 50-something street. So he's like, "This is how we be able to like grow stuff. There's the irrigation." It's really dope. Like, there's a reason I am the way I am. It was a good almost 4 or 5 years constant immersion into different things where you go to, because she was like super woke in Africa back then. So we'd go to like a free Africa movement, like on a lawn in Brooklyn, and they would be doing like interpretation and like showing readings and more or less saying like, "Hey, how we do it?" But all that changed when my brother was born, though.
Yeah,
all of that kind of came to a halt when my brother kind of came around because he was what's that word? Da-da-da. She couldn't do it for both, so she just like, "All
right, right."
Yeah. But yeah, I would study a bunch. City was not a huge endeavor. But when I started going by myself, I think maybe 15, 16. And we'd just go and we'd be doing normal kid shit. You go to Penn State, the mall, down to 14th Street, to roll dice, you know, that sort of thing.
Okay. So
you know, we roll dice, Harlem, same shit.
So you were going uptown and rolling dice? So you a gambler?
A little bit.
What was your
name? CeeLo. I was always CeeLo fans. Always CeeLo. CeeLo. And it was just, you're rolling it with the hopes that it – because the problem that I always had with CeeLo was that I never had enough money to close the loop. So you couldn't win and leave. So I'd do good in the beginning, but then someone would always have more money than I did. So they could just hang around until – yep, they just hang around long enough.
So you picked up CeeLo, and do you want to explain to people who are listening? I mean, I don't think we need to explain what CeeLo is. It's a dice game, three dices.
Three dice. You roll it. If you do 1, 2, 3, you lose automatically. If you do 4, 5, 6, you win. And you're pretty much whatever's inside the number. So it's like 1, 1, and 6. Just you count the 6. If it's 2, 2, and 6, it's 6. But if you do like 1, 1, like 2, 6, 6, 1, whatever that the single number is a number that you keep.
Okay.
And then you throw your money down, so, or you roll it. It's relatively easy.
Why did
easy.
You learn CeeLo and not learn spades? What happened?
CeeLo was easy. Spades is from a book. All right, I don't know spades. Everyone knows Daniel don't know spades. Daniel don't know line dances. I can't do either or. I can't do spades specifically because it requires a level. I would have needed to be taught at a much earlier age and a much more clean environment. You could learn CeeLo.
And your high school, people weren't playing spades in your high school cafeteria?
They were playing spades. They were playing spades, but they were playing it at – they were already at the level where I couldn't go and learn.
Okay.
Like, it was already at that level of – you know what I mean? Like, it was already at that point where tempers were flaring. I couldn't just jump in like, "Hey, how do you play? How do you fellas play?" Now, I was in the Domino's game, same boat. You couldn't just show up and be like, "How does this work?" Because if you get in trouble, niggas like, "Take this." This is all black folks. And so the spades games were so aggressive and angry. I was like, "I'm not getting involved in this." Niggas had a book.
Right.
Niggas was doing bidding. It was like wild language. They always would say it's just like Domino's. So I was like, "This is nothing like Domino's.
And there's a lot of strategy. You have to start to be in sync with your partner. And if you're not, then that's where you can kind of put yourself in a bad spot. My parents taught me how to play spades. I don't know what that tells you about them.
That's what's supposed to teach you.
Yeah, my parents, each of them had their own way of playing. So I would love the moments when I would come back with a move from my dad, and my mom would be like, "Your father doesn't know what the fuck he's doing. Like, that's not how you play." So, you know, we would have those.
Do y'all
bad
still
experience.
Play spades?
I don't play spades in public. I haven't been seen playing spades in public probably for like 20 years. I find it, people just take it a little too seriously for me. So it's not my thing. It's not what I do. I'll make the drinks. My sister and Ebony are big spades players. Ebony's
they get real mad. They get real mad real quick. Like, it's like taboo. I'm a good taboo. I fuck taboo. Speaking of which, shout out Simone Charles today on what would have been our 18th anniversary. Kudos to you and all you do for our child. You're the best.
Oh, yay. Yay, Monia.
Yeah, she nailed it. She nailed it. Good kid. But we kill the taboo, fam. killers. But you learn it's all about point of reference. It's not about, like, if someone goes, like for example, Bill Clinton, you don't have to go president, like blowjobs or whatever. And whatever your point of reference is to that. So the deeper your point of reference, the better at the game you should be. But
uh-huh.
again, that, you'll ruin your fucking relationship. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You know, you could end up sowing the seed of destruction with a one bad game of fucking Taboo. Because then you're like, who the fuck am I with? Like, what am I doing with my life that I'm with a nigga that don't know this, a chick that don't know that? Like, don't play Taboo with your person until you're sure.
No comment. So
I know no comment.
Let's
I'm just
talk
saying,
a little bit.
You are sure.
Let's talk about it. Let's talk about your opportunity to, like, nightlife. Like, because we all can agree.
Okay.
That
we have a wide discrepancy in terms of nightlife in that era. You was out on the street being fast. And
You was in the street being a fast ass back then.
In that era, I was in these streets. I was 10 toes down back then. Also, we need to have a short kind of pause off. There was a slight argument on 10 toes down, what it means. We had people saying that it was pimp slang for hoes doing work or for someone who's dedicated to a cause. And I'm dedicated to the street. I'm out here, my nigga. So for you, 10 toes down, what does it mean?
I've never heard that idiom before in my life. I don't know what the fuck it means. I just assumed it meant
okay.
You were stuck wherever you were. Because context clues.
Yeah. Context clues. Yeah, but it was like, no, something about pimps. I don't care what a pimp has to say, dog. I don't care what a pimp has to say.
I don't either.
Whenever someone goes, old pimp said this, fuck that old pimp, nigga. Fuck him. Fuck that guy. They got mad rules. Niggas was out there writing Game of Thrones, and I'm supposed to take the fuck you, the old pimp. But anyway, I was about to say, you were out and about. I was more doing the rapping in hallways, sitting in living rooms.
What happened for me was that I had the fortunate gift of having a friend who had a sister who was 4 years older than us.
Yeah, that's how you do it.
Yeah, so her sister, like, I think, like, one of the first club parties I went to was, like, a Zulu Nation party. I had no business being there. If I was 15, I was 16. I might have been 15. And that, I mean, it was fun. And I was shorter. Like, I grew 4 inches after high school. So I was probably, like, a good 5 feet tall at that time.
But then that's about right. I mean, if you had the huff of your voice, obviously no joke, if you had that going, and you also had the, you're about 5, as long as you're above 4'11", I think niggas would be on board with
it. And they were tall people. They were, her sister was 6 feet, she was 5'11". So no one was paying attention to me. So you just be quiet and just move and get in there. And no one wore makeup, really. Like, a lot of people, especially in that more hip-hop kind of space, people didn't really have to wear makeup or be too dressed up. So you were able to
fold in. What were these places?
Just,
you know, can you name some of these locations?
There was a lot. That was on the West Side. That was off of the West Side Highway. The Meatpacking District had so many clubs, like, up and down. But I don't remember the name of that place. It wasn't the Roxy, because I would know the Roxy. But it was just some place, and it was, like, a Zulu Nation party, and Q-Tip was there, and I was there. And I was like, I'm happy. This is great. And that was how we kind of got an entree to it. So, like, I got to go to the Red Zone, which is a place that, like, older people older than me would be at. But I got to go because I was getting entree from someone who was older than us, who was bringing us along. And when the time came, I did the same thing for my sister and her friends.
And you brought it along, except you don't have someone along.
Yeah, I took
you
in
end up living
alone. They were like 16,
you know,
and they were tall.
Perfect way to describe it. I was living, hanging with the homeboy like existence out in East Elmhurst, Queens. There was a lot of just chilling and plans that didn't come to fruition because there's like a language that goes to like going out at an earlier age that someone has to kind of walk you into it. And if they don't, you're just following a nigga that may have overheard the language and doesn't know it.
And my mom always say stuff like, you got to see the world. There's more than just, like, you got to, she always say that. Like, there's so much to see. And you don't need to be somebody that's stuck in your neighborhood and never goes anywhere and never does anything. So I took her at her word.
I wish we could get a Brooklyn person, just because I feel like our Queens experience, we were really taught, I think me too, from a different perspective, is there's a big innate fear that you're going to become one of those dudes who never leaves. Or one of those dudes who... Yeah, going to the city is a big thing. Like, oh, we got to go to Manhattan. Oh, boy, let's get ready. Let's get our stuff together and then go in and then be overwhelmed and come home. And then
see,
my,
I didn't
my
find
grandmother.
It to be that way. That way
no, I'm saying
that's
I think your mom did. I think your mom went out of her way to kind of, like, get to people. Like, oh, it's not a deal. It just goes there for you. And then my grandma went out the way to kind of, like, hey, here's for you, too. But there's a lot of people didn't get that experience who still find going to the city to be overwhelming or a big deal.
Right. And both of our families were people who were interested in what was beyond whatever their cultural shit was.
That was a big part of it.
You know what I mean? Like
a lot
my
of
dad,
people say that, but
like,
fuck, dang, what's in Manhattan for me that I can't get over here?
Oh, there's a list. Katz's Deli's
yeah.
in Manhattan, and well, you got to do that. I don't know.
Fuck with Katz's Deli, dog.
Them who doesn't fuck with Kathy's Deli?
The mustard tastes different. Like, the mustard tastes so good.
Yeah, I love
like
that.
Like a solid
it's pretty
mustard.
Great.
It's almost like they're cracking the fucking mustard seeds in the back.
Yeah,
there's always
it's
way
wonderful.
More black people working there than not.
Yes, and they're very nice, and they always give me and Tamiko free stuff when we go. Well, me.
Right,
and Tamiko
right.
too. But, I thought David would call in so he could tell us all about how wonderful it was to be in Brooklyn. But I made my way a lot to Brooklyn.
Yeah.
We made our way everywhere.
David doesn't realize that. No, because David feels on some level he's going to tell his story about Brooklyn and be like, all right, it's everything I knew was bullshit from the beginning, and it's going to coincide as bullshit. It's fine. It's okay. Queens is where it's at. We've admitted that. Up, down, left, and right. Best borough ever.
Did I ever tell you about this time that we trooped to the Fever from Jamaica?
Where's the Fever for the people who don't know?
The Fever in the Bronx. On the train.
Okay.
For a doo-wop party. Yeah, I think we did that.
That's
of course
point.
I do.
A lot of people need to recognize, no, not doo-wop, like, he's great, but I'm saying, like, just the idea of you can tell us about that dude in a second, but DJs, like the value of a DJ, of a known.
I mean,
DJ,
I love DJs.
And knowing that Spencer, why didn't do, why beef with duo?
Say what now?
Why we have beef with duo?
I don't have beef with duo.
You just said fuck that dude.
No, I didn't.
Oh, okay. I thought you said fuck that dude. Okay, I was about to say.
No,
it's so far down around that. But then beef with Duo would probably be open business at this point. I don't think anybody cares. Fucking Duo.
No. But we wanted to go to this party, and we got on the F and took the F to the D and then went to the Fever. And was so disappointed at how small it is, because the world without social media, you don't know what you're expecting. You know how to get to a place, but when you don't know what you're going to get once you get there.
Hold on, I'm going to go, because a lot of these places... A lot of these places were a thing. Like, I may have gone to a spot that you've gone to, and it was called something else by the time I got there.
No, the Fever was.
Yes, I know. All right. Hello. You know my mother telling me that story about Reggie.
About what? You're breaking up.
Reggie. Remember Reggie? I said a story about Reggie and how I went upstairs, and then I thought it was an after hours spot. It was an after hours spot,
yeah.
But then it was just like straight smoking crack. And then,
yeah.
Remember I said prior to going there, we went to a spot? We went there.
Yeah.
It was at the Fever. It wasn't called the Fever back then. It was called something else. Yeah, it was called something else. It was like, yeah, they weren't playing music. It was just a bunch of old niggas going, I want my 7-7. Could I get my 7-7? It was
right,
one
because I think
and
that
Jerome was off the block that I was at.
And we would do that. We did
the
that
Fever reunion.
No, thank you. I'm good.
You don't want to
it was,
Curtis Blow?
No.
Robbie.
And I remember going in there thinking, oof,
this could be bad.
Oof,
but it's okay.
Oof,
it'll be fine.
Oof, indeed.
I went to
Too
work
long you're feeling bold. Feeling bold. Real bold. That, I would imagine, what was the worst part about that? It seems like it's really cokey, a real cokey type situation you're walking into.
It wasn't cokey. It was just crowded as fuck. It was hard to get in. I hate waiting online. When we got in, it was so small that I was so taken aback by how little it was.
Yeah, the Bronx didn't really have any, like, big spots. There's always, like, little. But that's why there was always attic. Like, I could speak a little bit more about Bronx.
Wait, did you
go to Bronx? Yes,
yeah,
nigga. Yeah. Yes.
Oh, okay.
Jakey 100% was you'd go. And you're like, all right, I'm a 16, 17-year-old nigga. And Skanky's like right across the street from one of the more active projects. And yeah, I was like, well, Skanky, I'm like, I'm going to get some bitches there. I'm going to get some bitches at 16. You ain't getting no bitches at Skanky, bro. You know why? Because niggas my age now will get a bitches at Skanky. Big grown adult men. Niggas, full grown niggas was in there with cars.
Yep.
Open up 16 to 15-year-olds. When I say I'm not exaggerated, I'm not going, oh, okay, you just making up shit. No, these are full bearded, with gray in their beard niggas picking up 15-year-old girls, and it was common knowledge, and everyone knew it was happening.
See, we
like
to go there because we could drive from Queens. So because
yeah,
Queens,
it was easy
you know,
for
the Queens to the Bronx is an easy drive, so we would come up there a lot.
Yeah, it was
we
fun.
Had a good time.
And also,
did
you
ever go
a lot?
Yeah, but did you ever go to the rink in Bergenfield? Did you ever go to the rink in Bergenfield, New Jersey?
No. I didn't do nothing in New Jersey, dog.
Yeah. Yeah, kids used to
touch,
do a little party out there. We used to,
yeah,
when I tell
smart.
You that, anywhere,
oh, yeah.
And then once we got cars, and we'll leave it at that, Daniel, once we got access to cars, we pushed the boundaries even further. Because if what I found for me is that local places were unsafe, and going into spaces where there was people from different places just seemed safer, and you were less likely to end up catching the hot one. That was my experience. So
yeah,
no one
was going to clip you off of someone you knew. That was always my thought process. If you understand local history, anytime I've had like local static as an adult. It's been like, Arvo's been like, all right, there's been some sort of bub about my name. It's because I hung around. I was too close to my house. And
people
had beef with someone I knew and was like, well, now I got beef for you too. And then you realize that that's not what I'm into because I'm over 35. I'm not trying to shoot the five with some nigga over some other nigga. And I even have to say the nigga's name if you already know who I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't even have to say your name. So it's like, all right, I'm not doing that. So I was like, I'm not hanging out in local spots no more. It seems like it'd be fun. Unless the local spot is white. I mean, white. Fam, am I talking out of school? Like, if Burnside was by my house, I'd go to Burnside. I had no problem going to Burnside. Cause no one's congregating to Burnside looking to start no shit. But if you go to, like, Murder Bar, which is not really Murder Bar, we call it Murder Bar, the problem is that niggas are going in there, not holding the liquor right, starting shit with each other,
right.
Not solving nothing. Going outside, getting shit, coming back and shooting the place up.
Yeah,
I
mean,
told
that's
you the story of
the
nigga downstairs. His there were some twins that lived in a building. I think it was a gay one, I believe. He had a heart attack. He died. The lady was like the queen of the building. The lady who's the mother of the son who died. She was a queen. She was the one who had like multiple apartments in the building. She was on the board. She had like a leg into the hospital. So if you were just in her family, you were working at a hospital. And I think. I don't know how many of you are talking about old New York. Nothing was more fucking powerful in these streets than a fucking lanyard from a hospital that you worked in. You could have had a car key. You could have had a pager. You could have a phone. Nope. If you had a thing saying, Gail crewed up, Bronx, Lebanon, employee, you write all the tickets. You open all the doors. Because you, my nigga, are in a union. And you, you know what I'm saying? I don't know, was that like that by you, or was this a solely Bronx thing?
That was one of the things, but a lot of people in my part of town had wore uniforms. So having those uniforms,
MPA,
court officer, corrections officer,
even a little school safety love was shown before school safety kind of got absorbed. I'm trying to think what else. Anything like that. Those gigs, that was a lot of bus drivers, conductors, dispatchers, a lot of that on my side. And people's moms were nurses. That was it.
Nurses.
Like the black doctor with the office in the house in your neighborhood, because we had a couple.
Fam, that was y'all. Because our stuff was immigrants, first generation, and first and second generation immigrants.
A lot of our stuff was
like, by the time I was coming around, people had owned their home for maybe as long as I had been alive. It was the older people got a house, and they had the house for a little bit. And it was, that's why crack hit it as hard. Crack probably hit my area a bit harder than yours, and the fact that people really hadn't gotten past that first hump of capitalism, which is another show that I'm in the process of, like, I'm doing a lot of research for, because I want to do this one right, in terms of, like, when migrants come and how come certain migrants get seen in a better light than others. I think when you get here, you're the first generation, you're struggling through, you're, like, working odd ends, you get a house. The second generation comes along, and they kind of, like, one foot in the door, one foot out the door. And then third generation comes where they're still trying to make – they're the ones that are important. That's the one that, like, America's looking at, like, all right, let's see what these niggas do. And crack showed up. And they really know what to do because socially – how they've been taught to live is not viable anymore. You know, can't get a house.
Do you know anybody personally who got clean, who are making a better life for themselves?
I know somebody, but they didn't get fucked up then. They got fucked up later on. They got fucked up in the year 2002. I don't have the heart to ask how that happened. I have theories, but got fucked up on it. Like, cause I met her in like 97, 98. And he's cool, real cool. And then went off and was, like, solid, got a good job, and everything was good. And then apparently, like, got hit with the rock, but then was, like, fucked up for, like, 2-3 years. But because she was, like, in a really good job, didn't lose it, and got clean.
Okay.
You wouldn't know it to speak to her that she had this happen. You would look at her if I just look like anybody who's – I think if you start skinny and if you were skinny already, it doesn't really, you know, like, you didn't lose weight drastically. Like, she's not beat up. It doesn't look scarring or anything where she looks like she was fucked up.
Did you buy
anything
from crackheads?
Yeah, I bought a Beats by Dre off one. He was telling me about his
That's modern.
Thing.
Where did you find a crackhead who had Beats by Dre's? Was it last week?
No, the D Train. It was on the D Train. Nigga was like, I got these, whatever. I'm selling.
I think because of my experience very young, I never wanted any of their stuff because I always assumed there was somebody looking for their VCR or their.
You know, we got a TV from one. We got a VCR, a top little VCR for one. Because I'm going to be honest with you, and you know this, I've been clear, if anyone knows me, I don't care. So when I was like, you got it, I think in terms of what my mom would get, whatever they are, like, whatever weirds that they're selling. I remember once, and I feel really bad about it, I saw one selling a baby.
A what?
And a baby, like a full baby. They got a baby, whatever you need it for, a baby, like $5, $10, whatever you need it for. And I
what
was like,
wait,
if I don't
wait,
want
wait, a baby, a human, a small human?
Human, yeah, it was a baby. It was like 12 o'clock at night, like 12, 12:30, and they got a full baby, like it was baby money. And I was like, nope. I was like, I don't know how this is going to end, but I feel like getting me involved, getting my fingerprints anywhere near this is not going to be beneficial for me and the rest of my fucking life. So let me just pour some out for that baby. If I get in here and shit goes left, I can't guarantee. You know what I mean? I don't know. And part of me was like, I should just get this baby and call the cops and be like, yo, this nigga's out here selling a baby.
You ever get chased by the cops?
Have I been chased by the cops? No. I got one of the New Year's Eve niggas, like, plastic stripped me.
Wait, now, there's another thing that we need to get into in terms of New York, because we have different experiences in terms of, like, dating. I was doing a thing called the New York chat line. You were not.
I was not doing that.
Now, the New York chat line was you get on a phone, and I used to do it at work. It was like in the 80s. I'm on a phone, and you would get in this rotation, and you'd, like, flat. You'd like, hey, talk to, you know, like, hey, talk to so-and-so. And it was just like online dating, but just in person. It was like, oh, you didn't see it. It was all on a face. And you would just go from one awful house to another awful house, hoeing it up. But you always knew the perfect house to go because you were like 19, they're like 17, 16, and they go, oh, you know, my mom's a nurse, or my, you know, my dad's like a chef, but like my dad's not around. My mom's a nurse, my dad's not around, or my dad's a general contractor, and my mom's in the church. You might as well just fucking put it on the board.
Oh Jesus!
Put it on the board. But you didn't carry on that way.
How did you guys find out about this chat line? Seriously,
we all had a fat, ugly female friend that would tell us about it.
Yeah.
Mine was my cousin. Yeah, she came to me, very fat and very ugly, and told me that I got this thing called a chat line, and you could like link up, whatever, because that's what she was using to like lure Africans. So I was like, I give it a shot because I'm at work. I need time to dick off because I was in the union. So I would call
in.
And I was
in trouble for this? Like, because this is not a toll free call.
I was in $11.99. They would just slap my wrist. And then I would just not do it for a week and then do it again. And they would set the, as long as I showed improvement after a week, they would have to throw the whole thing away.
So you were running hoes through the $11.99 phone company
system, yeah, with their bread. With a, I had a flip phone. I had my Nextel. Was fucking killing it.
Okay,
back so then,
this
dog.
Is like the 90s, 2000s.
98, 99
Wow.
99 phone.
Okay, so then that's why it makes sense because in 1998 I would have been committing a crime by being on this chat line.
Well, no, they had chicks older than that. They had bigger than chicks. I mean, most people on there were like in there. I think it went from probably the problem for dudes was that these broads were lying. So these broads be lying, and you don't know they've been lying. You get there and you realize that, oh, this is these pins girls, right? There's another. See, I wish we would have gotten this a little bit earlier, just because this thing called pins girls, like girls who have pins, who are angry at somebody and making every terrible decision they can think of to get back at them, not realizing that the person that they want to be upset doesn't give a shit. It's never going to give a shit. Pins girls always come, you know, some apartment, just some random apartment that you go to, and then she'll go, oh, you're going to be this where I live. And there's a nigga signing people in and out. You're like, nope, this is a teen shelter. You're a liar.
Oh.
Yeah, there's a lot of that happening. So, a lot of going on. But then sometimes you luck out, you find a nice, good situation, go in, you enjoy some, enjoy the finest, big ziti, and you split a scene. But that was my move. What was your move back then?
In 1998, I had a job and a car.
And that's this nigga right here.
I did, though.
Remember that photo, that ID photo where I looked super foreign and super mad?
Yeah.
That was 1998.
Yeah, like I think 1998, I would have been planning my trip to my first trip to Freaknik on my second time.
You'll be doing some real whole shit, man. The real deal whole shit. I'm just saying, you weren't hoeing, but you were in the company of hoes. I saw Freaknik once because I was on a black college tour, and I'm on a black college tour, and I'm like, all right, cool. And I'm seeing one place that looks like the project, another place that looks like it's like a field, and in Hampton looked like it was on a slave field. But it was fine. I enjoyed it, but the thing I didn't enjoy about it was no one talked about academics. Once. Like, not one time.
So, wait, you didn't go to, like, Jones Beach Greek Fest and stuff like that?
Nah, I did Greek Fest once.
Really?
Nothing
just one?
Popped off, man. Yeah, who knows? We was, wow. We, the group that I was, the group I was with was,
did they
so,
not have a car?
No. No, there was one dude with a car, but he was Guyanese and petty. So we had access to a car senior of high school, so we would always be the niggas five to a whip, pull up to the high school with limb
right,
by limb
that's
playing.
The only way to do it.
Yes,
that's
thank
the only
you,
way to do
thank
it.
You. There's no better experience. Now, mind you, this is somebody who has a child. This is someone who's found love. This is somebody who has jumped over a bum. I've done it all. There's no better feeling than rolling up to your high school at 10 before it starts with music blaring, with your hand out, ski goggles on, just the king of the goddamn world. I get Al Bundy now. By the way, I get it. I completely get it.
Well, what I was saying is the only way to be in a car when you're under about 22 is to have it filled beyond the capacity that was in that brochure that you got at the car show, where you've got more people in there than truly necessary. We used to roll around in like a 1984 brown Honda Excel four-door.
That sounds like it'd be terrible, but it's not. It was fucking lit back then.
Yeah.
It was fucking fire, dog. Are you in? I'm going to look. First time you ride in a car for a nigga that's not a family member, you feel like you are breaking the law. You feel like you're breaking the law. Like, what am I doing getting a car with this nigga? Who's this? Or better yet,
well,
you got
first,
a whole
well, I
mob
think, now
with,
you,
too.
Again, this is where you and I are different. I do not like getting in strange people's cars, but
yeah, sure.
My friend at the time drove, because remember, I got skipped, so I was younger than most of my friends. So my friend had her learner's permit, because in New York pre-9/11, you could drive around on a learner's permit for 50 fucking years, and the most somebody would do is give you a ticket, whereas now, if you do that shit, you'll go to jail.
Can we be honest? 9/11 really was an inconvenience more than anything else. Like, it really,
no,
I mean,
no,
yeah,
I mean,
for sure. No, I mean, I'm saying this. Don't claim this. Don't jump aboard with this. I'm saying this is me. This is me saying this. It has nothing to do with pregame radio or the people involved with it. This is an opinion by Daniel and Daniel only. That shit was a huge fucking inconvenience. But it feels like, you know, a bunch of people died, yes. But it seems like none of the things that needed to get accomplished got accomplished by that terrorist attack. All it did was make it where getting from point A to point B became increasingly hard.
Yes.
Especially if you watch a movie before 2001 and see how easy it is for people to just get in and off an airplane.
Yeah.
It's amazing. It's amazing. And all these dildos went off and killed all these people just to make it hard for me to get on a plane and hard for me to get a license. I'm still waiting for my return license. I have not gotten it yet.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Did you ever ride a Bentley?
No. Again,
what
a lot of these
doing?
Places have changed. What, fam? What year
Bentley's
was this?
Bentley's never changed. No, Bentley's was the club you tried. Like, Bentley's was, like, pre the Shadow. So, like, the Shadow was, like, for much older people. But Bentley's was when you were trying to go so
hey,
and be an adult. Yeah.
That man had, okay.
Can I tell you a funny story? Do we have time? Because I think
yeah,
it will really encapsulate.
Yeah, but yeah, we can get it out in 2-3 minutes. And yeah, go ahead.
All right. So Bentley's, people used to drive around. If you weren't going to go in, you'd go up and down the block, drive around the block or whatever. So we were in a car. We had graduated, I think, my friend at the time. She was up to like a 95 Camry. So me, Tamiko, and the friends, and maybe another person, we're driving around. We decide we're not going to go in Bentley's, but we're just rolling around, talking to guys or whatever, whatever we were doing. So then we turn a corner, and the light hits a revolving door, and there's a dude standing there butt naked, black dude. And when the light hits him, he starts grinning, and he takes off running. What do you guess that we did?
Where he
we
lived?
Chased him. So, no, he was running. So we started chasing him through the streets in New York in the car. And then we pulled up on him and we asked him, like, what he was doing and why he was doing it. And he was like, I don't know. I just always wanted to do this. Now, I think he was on drugs. But it was the
no.
shit in the world. Yeah. He was like a youngest dude. And he was butt naked, like no shoes on, just running through Midtown Manhattan in the middle of the night, dipping from like doorway to doorway until these maniacs catch a glimpse of him and decide to chase him like we're in a fucking safari, yelling out the car, out the fucking sunroof. We're like, what are you doing?
General fucking principle, fam. General yeah, goddamn principle, dog. You can't show me a meat, dog. I'm asking to see a meat. Let's do the assignment.
Yeah, so we like literally chased him. Yeah, totally chased him. It was very funny. I think Ebony was there too, just to give you a sense of like what all was. Ebony was there. We were corrupting the kids.
It was a good time.
It was a good time. All kinds of shit used to see. I mean, we just used to run into all kinds of shit. We used to talk to the hookers in the meatpacking district and be like, yo, are you cold? Like, why do you do this? You pay people, let people pay you to have sex. Because they were young. They were like our age. A lot of those girls. That's
craziest fucking thing, fam. But hey, we're about
they
to wrap
girls.
Up. I'm thinking next week. Right, because we did this one next week, but we didn't get into any like the clubs and the dating and the specifics. And I'm actually asked David Brandt to kind of come on so we can like have him on and we can do a part two next week.
No, you know who week. You need to ask aside from David? You should ask Malcolm because he's got all the stories.
See, Malcolm's gonna try to play cool, but I'm gonna see if I can get him on. And yeah, we can get Malcolm on. David can pull on as well. All right, so let me let you go. Thank you. Did you eat all your food, or is there something left over?
Oh yeah, you didn't even ask me what I had for dinner.
Something hippie-ish, I would imagine.
I made a seafood curry cauliflower rice.
Did you really, huh? Seafood with the shrimp.
Calamari, shrimp, scallops, a little bit of this, a little bit of that, you know.
And cauliflower.
Cauliflower rice.
Very
little skingili.
Ooh. Man, what did I have today? I got some bullshit, but let me get out of here. We'll see you next week.
All right.
Later. And I hope.
Bye.
Again, bye. I got, what's the word? Black NPR Pod. Twitter.com. The Black NPR at Outlook.com. Thank you. Also, go to all of our sponsors. Go to Pregame Radio. Support the show. Support the producers. Right? Do all of those things. Thank you for listening to the show. It's pretty fucking rad. I want to give a special shout-out to my kid. Thank you for some resolve. Thank you for a big shout-out to Queen, bro. Thank you. You're amazing, as you know. So if you're listening right now, this one goes from me to you. And then another shout-out to Chantel for coming on. Amazing. Always a good time. And also a shout-out for David Brad for letting me know that Brooklyn sucks. Enjoy the rest of your night, folks.
We are Sex Bob-omb, and we're here.